master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. Audre Lorde famously penned those words nearly four decades ago. But what do they mean today for those doing the work of justice and reconciliation? What are the tools that will create systems of equality? This is the Faith and Finance Podcast. This episode comes from the session, The Roots of Culture Change, which was a part of the culture track for Neighborhood Economics. I'm Rosalie Harden, executive producer of Faith and Finance. Welcome to our podcast. In this season, we're presenting our Neighborhood Economics Healing Our Communities virtual event, which was held in November of 2020. Economies of interdependence are emerging all around us, and Neighborhood Economics brought together entrepreneurs and change makers, developers and storytellers, pastors and impact investors, to share where their communities are finding hope and a way forward. This session was moderated by David Bailey and featured Joanna Taft and Patton Dodd. The full session of The Roots of Culture Change is available for purchase along with the rest of the Neighborhood Economics Conference at community.faithfinance.net. I hope you'll enjoy their conversation.
Well, my name is David Bailey. I am the founder and director of Erebon, organization that equips Christian leaders in the communities to build reconciling communities. And a lot of the work that we do is on culture change. How do we shift the culture to engage in being more of a reconciling community around issues of race, class, and culture? I would love to talk a little bit about just where the name of this panel is The Roots of Culture Change. And this term roots is a term that is connected to growing something, cultivating something, gardening. And the word culture, like in many ways, is such akin to actually nurturing, growing, and cultivating something. And so as you're trying to nurture and cultivate change, what are some essential roots or essential ingredients or essential kind of foundational aspects of it to engage in culture change? And so, you know, Patton, how about we get you started on that question?
Sure. So lately I've been thinking about this in terms of attention, that one of the primary roots of culture change is the issue of attention. I think about this all the time because I keep a rock on my desk. I'll reach over and grab it that actually has the word attention on it. I've had this, I did this at a retreat, I don't know, maybe 4 years ago, to remind myself of the importance of focusing my own attention throughout my day, which is the hardest thing possible to do, to stay focused, to keep your focus narrow and to go deep. And I used to think of that a lot in terms of just my own kind of personal life and, you know, needing to avoid the temptation of distraction, mainly Twitter and ESPN and other kinds of distractionary media. But I've come to realize that in like social impact work, the role that attention plays is also really primary. We, in our work, have to choose over and over again to attend really to two things. One is place and one is people. We're talking about inequity, economic segregation. That's a massive, gargantuan kind of challenge. And it's very easy in this like field, in this discourse, to let your head be in the clouds a lot and to constantly be focusing on the many, many dimensions of this problem. And we are trying to practice the discipline of instead attending much more narrowly to the place where we are. We have to decide over and over again, and like sort of organizationally, to pay attention to San Antonio and to tell people that no, San Antonio is the place where we're having this conversation. It could be much broader and bigger. We have the capacity, I think, actually to be broader and bigger, but it would be unwise. We also have to pay attention to particular neighborhoods. I suspect that Joanna is doing a better job of this than we are, but we have to be rooted in very particular places and get to know them. San Antonio has a rich, complex history. It's some of the oldest, at least U.S. history, and this part of our world is in San Antonio. The second oldest park, almost second only to Boston Common, is here in San Antonio. You know, we're a mission city established by Franciscans hundreds of years ago. And there's old stories, there's old grounds to walk on, there's old stories to tell, there's people who are connected to that past. We also have, of course, much more contemporary history in segregated parts of town, Hispanic, Latina, and Latino history, African American history, German history, and other kinds of European roots throughout our city. And those dynamics from place to place in San Antonio are important to attend to. And we have to, again, it's like just the discipline of attending over and over again to particular places and to the people in those places. I think for us, constructing and practicing good habits of attention to place and to people is at the very heart of what it will mean for us to do culture change.
So I love what you said, and I think I would say that, except I would use completely different language. Your language is much smarter than my language. but what I learned was that in our revitalization work of neighborhoods, we were looking for the harvest without addressing the roots, right? So if you have a plant that is a healthy plant, the community's not gonna thrive unless the roots are healthy too. So the pain that our neighborhood has experienced has been because we went about revitalization the wrong way. So what we do now is we believe that we need to know our stories. We need to know the stories of the long-term neighbors, and we need to know the stories of the neighborhood. We elevate them so that we can invite new people into the story. What we've seen, and I've been guilty of this myself, when I moved into my neighborhood 31 years ago, I thought I was an urban pioneer. I thought it was a blank slate. I thought a history was 100 years old. I didn't think history was 30 years old. So there were neighbors that moved in before me 30 years ago, but to me, their story wasn't as important. And I was working on a blank slate. And so now I understand that history is also 10 years old and it's 20 years old and 30 years old. It's not just 100 years old. And that we use the power, art is powerful, and we use the power of the arts to elevate those stories because sometimes there are amazing stories that even the existing neighbors don't know, even the long-term neighbors don't know, which is, you know, so we use the power of art to elevate the stories of the long-term residents, the stories of the neighborhood. And we invite new neighbors and old neighbors into an existing story. So we're not treating the neighborhood as a blank slate.
Mike, writing a note about this, because I feel like I mean he's talking about engrafting into the story and the narrative of what's already there. What I also just like, even in both of y'all's framing, is a lot of times folks are like trying to change the world, but not trying to change like the discipline of changing their particular place. And like what I think was great about your foundation, right? Like, I mean, y'all have the money to do a lot more than, I mean, y'all have the money to do stuff around Texas, you know, or if you want to do something more national, you can. But what? How did y'all get to the space where you said, hey, let's focus on San Antonio, or let's focus on, and y'all are like San Antonio and a couple of the places where y'all are playing, where you do your work. You're doing a little bit of the canyon, you know, but could you kind of, why'd you decide to go hyperlocal?
It was really hard. Not without trial and error, first of all. I've only been here 5 years, and I think that the foundation went through an exploratory phase. The foundation has gone through a leadership change over the last, say, 10 years, maybe 8 years. And with that transition, There was a lot of opportunity to expand the mission and to do a lot of new things, and different things were tried across the nation and even across the world. There was, though, consistently and persistently from the leadership, a lot of talk about how we care about families and children. We care about families and children, and we care about San Antonio. And the foundation didn't really have a presence in San Antonio at all, even though the foundation leadership had lived here for half a century. Our work was mostly in the Hill Country, about 2 hours away. And I don't know. I think ultimately we decided to take seriously what are the particular circumstances of families and children in our city. You know, we had a big, broad mission statement around cultivating healthy families and children, but what does that look like? What are the unique challenges families in San Antonio are facing? And I think we started to ask that question over and over again, and to take it seriously and to look at social science, look at like hard data, not just like the people that we knew, but like what are we seeing? What's in the census? What has come out of community surveys that the city and county and state have done? What have other foundations done? We talked to a lot of people, and you know, I would say that most people in our, I guess I said at the top of this panel that we have the highest poverty rate in the US. That was according to the American Community Survey last year, but we've been near the top for a long time. We have, as I said, one of the widest wealth gaps in the nation. And that's been true in San Antonio for a long time. But most people in our constituency and even in our leadership did not know that. Like, it's a pretty basic fact if you start Googling about San Antonio, but it wasn't like at the top of the minds of a group of people who were saying that what we care about is families and children in San Antonio. And so I think that we, just through a series of conversation and study and reflection and kind of talking to people locally, decided that, you know, the best chance to have any sort of significant impact was to stay local and to go deep and to I don't know, develop a sense of like moral responsibility to our neighbors. Now we don't, I mean, I think we're still pretty broad. I mean, it's all over, it's the seventh biggest city in the nation. And I would say, I worry that we're still too broad in our imagination. I mean, Joanne is rooted in really a particular place. Like, I don't know, Joanne, but I'm imagining it's a few like square blocks. I don't know. I don't know what your radius is like. I think ours is probably still too big. But I am glad that we have stayed, you know, within 20, 30 minutes driving distance of everyone that we care about, trying to touch with this work. So I'll pause there.
You know, real quick, Joanne, before you respond, I want to, you know, as I'm thinking about this, Pat, I mean, you and I, we met 5 years ago. I can't believe it's been that long. And so yeah. This journey to where y'all are now, and I think y'all are in a different space. It took about 5 years to get to where y'all are now. And I'm pretty sure it took some time before we met and been a part of that conversation. How long do you think it took? And do you think you could have done it even any faster?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think probably, like I said, I got here about five and a half years ago. I think the kind of faint conviction to focus on San Antonio definitely started before my time here. So I don't know, maybe another 5 years before that. And then it took us a while to, you know, name and really hold on to the conviction to decide to be really local. And to sit, because a lot of it's saying no. We had lots of opportunity, as I said, to go much broader, and invitations from like sexy leaders and organizational partners that would have been cool. It would have made, I think, some of our leaders and funders look cool. Saying no to that stuff was hard, I think. And I would say maybe it took a couple years for us to really own the conviction, our growing sense of conviction. And then it's taken us, yeah, this long to even find our footing on, you know, how to do this work locally and even knowing what we're doing. So I don't know how long that is. Let's say we're roughly 10 years into this and have only within the last maybe 2.5 years begun to really find our footing. And, you know, now we're taking baby steps. We have a long, long way to go in this work.
And then, Joanna, how about you? I mean, like how long did it take for you to kind of get into the direction? And I feel like you're now probably a little further along being rooted in a way, but you just didn't come into the neighborhood with that in mind.
So I've been doing this for 21 years, and you know, I've always tried to be a good neighbor, and I've always tried to be, you know, kind, but I still had blind spots, and my blind spots did more damage than I understood. Mm-hmm. So I think I still have blind spots. Somebody asked me the other day, what are your blind spots? I'm like, I don't know what my blind spots are. I'm so blind. Ask me next year what they were this year. So what I'm just excited about is how much growth I've seen in myself and the Harrison Center's vision in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I have so much, you know, more hope for how, as long as we have learned to be better listeners and learn to get outside of our own story and understand other people's stories, it's just making a huge difference. I do want to go back to your original question.
Yeah, please.
I think.
Yeah, please.
About why local, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I have two things to say about that. One is, so I feel absolutely powerless about the national scene, and I felt that way for a very long time. But I do think I can do something about my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I do think that I've been called to love my neighbors. I've been called to partner with those, you know, that God puts in my path. And so that is why we have really felt a calling to for the healing of our neighborhood and healing of, you know, kind of the, we kind of go out maybe about 2 miles out from the Harrison Center. But so an example would be, and I think maybe I've talked about this in the plenary, in my family has been porching since 2007. So we sit on our porch every Sunday from 3 to 5:30 with neighbors. And we did that. And then in 2014, we turned it into a Harrison Center program, because what I realized was I felt so connected. Porching helped me feel connected. And when a person feels connected, and that happens across when a person's connected, they're healthy, right? And then when that happens across a neighborhood, the neighborhood becomes healthy. And when that kind of thing happens across the city becomes healthy. And then hopefully eventually we'll get to the national level, right? But I've seen this ripple effect of a simple thing of sitting on your front porch and connecting with your neighbor. My porching has changed in the last 5 years. I don't porch with my friends anymore. I porch with a variety of folks that aren't necessarily like me. And it's not always easy, to be honest with you, but it's much richer. The other thing I want to say, there was a comment in chat and they asked me if we did any cross-pollination. And I would say that cross-pollination is the key to everything that we do. I'm a generalist. I don't know anything about anything, by the way. I'm a generalist. And so we've partnered with the education sector to start schools. We've partnered with community development. We've partnered with economic development. We have one of the groups in our building works 100% with people with physical disabilities. We have been partnering with an agency that serves returning citizens for the past 6 months and are deepening that partnership, really ramping up that partnership. And so I believe so much that art is powerful and that art can heal and is necessary for healing, that I am anxious to cross-pollinate and to partner cross-sector so that we can share that.
Thank you for listening to The Roots of Culture Change from Neighborhood Economics, Healing Our Communities. This session was moderated by David Bailey and featured Joanna Taft and Patton Dodd. The full session of The Roots of Culture Change is available for purchase along with the rest of the Neighborhood Economics Conference at community.faithfinance.net. For more information about Faith Finance, be sure to follow us on Twitter at faithfinancenet or visit our website at faithfinance.net. Next up, music by David Benjamin Blower. David was our musical guest artist for Neighborhood Economics. You can find more of his music at davidbenjaminblower.com. I hope you enjoy, and again, thank you for listening.
Well, I stood there and smoked over the edge of the boat. Watch the clouds come and go and the seagulls flying low. And the sailors with their knives all stood there dreaming of their wives. And they were kindly in the eyes as though familiar with my kind. The ocean says nothing to me. Oh, the ocean says nothing to me. The ocean says nothing to me. Oh, the ocean says nothing to me. But I take solace in the sight of my plight, the ballad of the traveling man, his vanity I know, but it's mine. And the crew know very well that they say they travel to find themselves. Self-deluded everyone, it's ourselves we're running from. And the ocean says nothing to me. Oh, the ocean says nothing to me. The ocean says nothing to me. Oh, the ocean says nothing to me. I'm tired of my work and I'd like to sleep through all the hurt. The ocean's vast and sad. I'll sleep through good weather and bad. I want to sleep.